Hello, hello. Welcome to B2B Craftworks, a podcast about business writing. Today I have a story for you. I want to share my friend Jay Akunzo's piece, Nothing is Boring, How to Tell Gripping Stories About the Seemingly Mundane. Now, this is a piece that first appeared in his newsletter. If you're not already subscribed to that and you write in B2B, you really want to make your way over to jayakunzo.com and check that out. From the minute I ran into Jay on Twitter 3 or 4 years ago, I could tell he was just different and just special with the way he thought about marketing, B2B content, storytelling. It just felt like the layer of nonsense that a lot of instructional or thought leader-ish materials layer on to how to write, it just wasn't there with Jay. So he has all the credentials, ex-Google, HubSpot, ESPN, VC, but he is also just actively doing the work. No one is thinking about storytelling or how the essence of creation applies to the business world as in-depth as Jay is. So here is Nothing is Boring, How to Tell Gripping Stories About the Seemingly Mundane by Jay Akunzo. The Quaker Diner in West Hartford, Connecticut serves the same food as every other diner. Serves the same coffee, too. Endless amounts of mediocre light brew, generously poured into thick white mugs. Coffee like that tricks my mind into thinking it's delicious simply because I'm sitting in a diner. The moment contains a little sadness, a little nostalgia, and of course, a lot of coffee. The last time I sat in this particular diner and drank that particular coffee, I realized that despite the same old menu, the place exists as something entirely unique to each individual who passes through it. Everyone who knows it knows a different version of the Quaker Diner. This average diner with the same old menu was the setting of a writing project for one of my favorite classes at Trinity College, creative nonfiction. Each morning, for what felt like a cruel number of mornings to a 21-year-old, I'd trudge down the street from my off-campus house, past broken beer bottles and discarded slices of pizza congealing in the morning sun. I'd swing open the door to the trolley car turned diner, grab myself a booth, and slump down with my notebook for some of that gray, deep coffee. Oh, the romantic life of a writer. To me, the Quaker Diner was nondescript, but that semester, my task was to describe it, to bring it to life, to sit with it and poke, prod, and think and feel enough to find something, anything to write about it. In short, I had to find a story somewhere in the seemingly mundane details of life. In our line of work, I can think of no greater skill. Whether you write or speak or podcast or shoot video, design apps or org charts or company cultures, you are in the business of finding something meaningful to say to others, to resonate with them and spark action, all while feeling surrounded by a whole lot of mundane details. Unfortunately, we lose our abilities to tell stories the more years we spend away from our schooling. Or really, the more years we spend feeling like adults, not children. My ability to tell legitimate stories started to erode the moment I entered the world of tech, startups, and content marketing. In my early jobs for companies like Google and HubSpot, I picked up some very important business knowledge. It's true. But I was a far better writer at 21 than, say, 25. I don't know if there's a single thing to blame. All the obsessing over SEO and headlines to drive clicks and immediate results, and all the overemphasis placed on efficiencies and optimization couldn't have helped. Summed up another way, because the act of merely telling stories wasn't important sounding enough, everyone began to focus on very important business reason why you'd do such a thing. Process stopped being the point. The results were everything. While I understand it, I also think we should try to fight it. In my 20s, I stopped fighting it, and I became a worse storyteller as a result. Like the sad-looking chef at the Quaker Diner slinging scrambled eggs every day, for years, I just kept shipping sloppy articles. 3 for $1, the breakfast special served with a side of pop-ups. Can I interest you in a chocolate-covered ebook after your meal? Order up! I've returned to stories. I only stopped my downward spiral towards mediocrity when a friend named Nico, appropriately enough for this story, a friend from college, asked what happened to my creative nonfiction writing. He used to enjoy reading it. He thought I should have become an investigative journalist. I appreciated the sentiment, but also hurt to hear. I like the business world for all my complaints. I like content marketing, and I love this exploration style of work I do through my newsletter, podcast, forthcoming courses, books, and more, all to serve you. Inspired by Nico and nursing a sore ego, I asked my dad to send me the backup files of my college writing that he had thankfully saved to his computer. And suddenly, I was back in that mundane diner with the same old menu. I could practically smell their weak, wonderful coffee as I read words written by what felt like a different person named Jay. Here it is. The Quaker Diner is the smallest building on its block along Park Street, West Hartford. The ceiling of the long, narrow restaurant resembles that of the Park Road Trolley, whose final stop was just outside the restaurant when it opened in 1931. Along the curved ceiling spin two fans, one slower than the other, which barely cool the customers occupying the row of green rubber-topped stools running down the bar to the right. The menu is a single-fold inventory of breakfast items, sandwiches, and odds and ends, listed above the diner's mantra, where you don't bring your friends, you go to see your friends. Customers nicknamed Hungry Al and Home Fry enter on cue as one of the eight workers on staff leans over the counter to ask, "What's your pleasure today?" Long, drawn-out notes of the trombone play through the diner's speakers and clash terribly with the regular beats of R&B music pouring from the kitchen in the back, where another grill sits, hardly touched. Chefs Jose and Aurelio move to the beats of Beyoncé and work the main grill below the restaurant specials, written in colorful marker on the backs of placemats taped to the silver metallic wall for all to see. The placemats have been the same for as long as most of the staff can remember. The only sheet which is consistently rewritten is a list of several past events reading "This Day in History." That was it. Overwritten? You bet. Tough to follow? Yes. Void of my current tone of voice and all its colloquial and vibrant, dare I say, glory? Absolutely. But I was striving toward something. I didn't want to desperately hold on to your attention lest you go visit a competitor site. I wasn't focused on not getting fired. I sure as hell had no concerns about stuffing the paragraphs full of redundant gift-wrapped key takeaways. No, I was telling a story. That's all. I was merely telling a story. In the past 5 years or so, I've rekindled my love of crafting stories. It all began with identifying the missing piece to most of my previous writing, and indeed most of the stuff I see in B2B today. To tell better stories, we don't need more vivid details. Come on, College J. We don't need more production polish. Who doesn't love some slow-mo drone footage? We don't even need protagonists that Hollywood would cast. The missing piece is far simpler. We need more tension. Sometimes the tension can feel grand. Who's the killer? Who will sit on the Iron Throne? Will this wave of tech innovation save the internet? But most times, the seemingly mundane day-to-day world, the tension is small, yet still somehow profound. The subtle sadness of a place, the yearning for something more, the appreciation of a loving moment met with a concern for what the future holds. A person just trying to do a good job despite daily demands pushing against that. Stories are about meaning and emotions, and at the core of anything meaningful is tension. Life itself gains meaning because life ends. It could end at any time. One simple story. Any story can be distilled into three basic parts: status quo, tension, resolution. Whether it's a nursery rhyme or an epic novel, the first fundamental piece of a story is the status quo, something that's unfolding that others recognize, perhaps even don't find particularly gripping. Then the big question, the moment of conflict, or even the tiniest shred of doubt, something interrupts, threatens, or redirects the flow of the status quo. Now, in the minds of the audience, they have questions that deserve an answer. They want to continue. And so we, the storytellers, march them towards the resolution. We open the loop, and then we close it. Number one, status quo. Number two, tension. Number three, resolution. We've been learning this since we were children, but the working world tends to squeeze these kinds of lessons out of our minds and replace it with, well, very important business knowledge. Just think about how simple this really is. Number one, the itsy-bitsy spider went up the rain spout. Status quo, statement of fact, not a story, not yet. Number two, down came the rain and washed the spider out. Uh-oh, tension, the poor bugger. I wonder what'll happen to him. Number three, out came the sun and dried up all the rain. The itsy bitsy spider went up the waterspout. My man, you did it. Proud of you. Tension resolved. Think about the standard innovation story told across the business world. Number one, the old way was that status quo. Number two, but the world has changed. Tension. Number three, so we need to do things a new, better way. We need to embrace this resolution. And oh, by the way, the company telling the story happens to offer a means to achieve that new, better way. Buy our tool, take our course, hire our consultants, subscribe to our show, join the newsletter. That's the power of great stories. If you grip someone and hold their attention long enough, and if the way you communicate aligns with their own life experience, i.e. how resonance works, then they feel a sudden urge to act, i.e. why resonance matters. Moving people from conversation to subcontent, from this content to that content, or from content to a purchase, the next step becomes a logical one in their minds. Oh, by the way, they take actions that somehow benefit us because it feels more like a logical upsell at the end of a story than a hard sell out of the blue. As I sat in the Quaker Diner all those years ago, I realized something that, especially in today's world, we need to remember more often. Everybody is going through something. I looked around, took it in, and discovered all kinds of tiny moments of tension. From my booth, I noticed one such moment by the bar. Suddenly, a story from the seemingly mundane details around me. "I never got a slip," the man says. He's been nervously poking around his eggs, cramming a forkful in his mouth every so often between glances at the New York Times. With his brown bomber jacket, stained blue cap, and sporadic mutterings under his breath, he seems to live in a world slightly different than our own. He flips rapidly through the paper, too quickly to read anything more than a headline or a photo caption. But his eyes have remained on the pages until now. "Excuse me, miss, I've never got a slip," he says. Kathy walks over and humors him. "But you never do, do you?" The man smiles sheepishly. $6.95, he asks. He fumbles around his jacket pocket, hands Kathy a crumpled $10 bill. Kathy scribbles on her green pad and drops the check in front of him. $6.75. He's 20 cents off the mark. He takes a few sips of his coffee, runs a hand over the few strands of white hair that he has left under the cap, curses audibly before limping out the door. As I witness what some might call nothing unfolding in front of me, the waitress, Kathy, evolved into one of the three different protagonists of my eventual six-page story, together with the owner's diner, Harry, and another waitress, Marilyn. Kathy had been working at the Quaker for just under a year when I met her. She claimed to be between jobs, but after 8 months at the diner, along with 30 minutes talking to me, I just assumed she'd stay put a while. Here's another quote from the story. She supports two children, but she can't bear the thought of returning to her old job in the state tax department, where she spent 23 years. She likes the diner, likes meeting the people, likes serving school principals, Trinity students, and the conductor of the Hartford Symphony Orchestra. Most of all, she likes calling the old customers honey, sweetie, and seeing their day bright ever so slightly. They're not much older than Kathy, but she sells the younger attitude as well, a product of her years spent bartending. All it takes to tell a meaningful story for the mundane details around us is attention, however fleeting, however subtle. These tiny differences make all the difference in the world. Kathy becomes a character when we learn about the tension between supporting her kids and working this job, or even the more subtle tension between the way she flirts with older customers and her actual, not so much younger age. Likewise, the man reading the Times stands out just a bit more when he never gets his slip or mutters to himself, "We wonder why," or when he guesses the wrong price or audibly curses before leaving the diner. Tiny pockets of tension, packaged and delivered. Meaningful moments hidden in the mundane. Stories are everywhere,
if we're willing to look.
I'm guessing you and I share something in our efforts to tell more gripping stories. We work in industries or serve customers experiencing far more than just a little tension. In fact, those we serve likely feel enormous amounts of tension due to equally enormous amounts of change, fusion, stress, disruption, and personal conflict, which, let's face it, are far more pressing, therefore gripping anything listed in a P&L. Whether we choose to find those details and use them in our communication is up to us, but it's all there, and it's all a lot more obvious than the quirks of the Quaker Diner. We need only take a little bit of that tension, let it brew for a while, and pour it generously into a thick white mug. We only need to use a tiny bit more emotion and grill up a few more piping hot questions for a dish worth serving. The man never got his bill. The The woman grappled with reconciling her job and her duty as a parent. The customers needed a smile as they shuffled slowly through life. To this day, the Quaker Diner sits there, frozen in time. It seems the menu is far from the only thing that's same old, same old. Every day seems mundane, unless you're a storyteller. A young boy approached an old horoscope machine sitting in the back. He twisted a few knobs and tapped on the glass. "That thing hasn't worked in years," says Marilyn from behind the counter, just a drop of southern molasses to her voice. Reluctantly, the boy saunters over to his grandfather, where he receives a tiny kiss on his head and a command, "Stop growing." Back at the front, Marilyn wipes down the counter and prepares to close the diner at 2:30 sharp. She says that in 17 years of waitressing here, she's rarely seen people attempting to use the fortune teller, despite the claims emblazoned on the machine. Lady Di won't be giving anyone any forecasts today. Marilyn tugs down a paper placemat that had been taped in the wall, grabs a new sheet, and begins to write tomorrow's This Day in History. Inside the Quaker Diner, there's no need to predict the future. If you like this story, you can get one twice a month or so, along with podcast episodes, frameworks, and early access to projects that Jay is working on. Just head to jayakunzo.com and subscribe to his newsletter, Playing Favorites. And if you like this episode, send me an email and let me know. Email hello@bdbwritinginstitute.com, and I'll be on the lookout for more great marketing content to read.